Circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Well, yes, indeed. These are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of this strangeness. Welcome to program 375. Tonight, Dave Frelott, with his take on things, British correspondent and publisher, editor of UFO Review, Stuart Miller. And in the second hour, the co-publisher of the Canadian UFO Report, Chris Rutkowski, with an interim report, or who knows, maybe it'll be a final report by the time he gets on air, for 2005, the Canadian sightings and reports of those sightings. Those of you who missed hearing Don Ledger last week because we couldn't get a hold of him, well, his number rang busy. And well, you'll be happy to know that he's okay. It seems his granddaughter, who was visiting, had taken a cordless phone into her bedroom, called her mother, and forgot to turn the cordless phone off. So Don Ledger will join us next Saturday night, probably at around 9:30. Those of you who listen to this program on a regular basis and have listened over the years, because we are, after all, in our eighth year. It's mind-boggling. 375 of them as of tonight. We'll recall that we have talked in the past about, well, for instance, a Japanese fish farm, a series of interconnected concrete pools, all monitored by computer and monitored 24 hours a day, and alarms going off in the middle of the night and saying on the computers that the water level had plummeted in all the pools. So the tech who was there rushed outside in time to see a large circular glowing object sucking water out of the fish tanks. Fish breeding farm, big tanks. Big water being taken on board by this object hovering over the fish tanks. Quite a good description of it, too. A similar kind of story out of Argentina this past week. On Tuesday, January 10th at around 10 to 6, Eduardo Virgilio Sangoni phoned from the town of Canada del Luke, near Totoral in northern Cordoba province, reporting that on Thursday, January the 5th, nearly 20,000 liters of water had vanished overnight from a water tank in a field belonging to Domingo Ordonez, Eduardo Virgilio Sangoni's neighbor. According to Sangoni's statements, Mr. Ordonez had checked the water level the previous day, and it was absolutely normal. And he was unable to explain how so many liters of water could vanish from one day to the next. Interested in UFO phenomena, Mr. Sangoni, and presumably he'd heard similar stories to the Japanese story, even the Japanese story, went to his neighbor's field to ascertain that there was no water seepage through any crack in the tank's walls or bottom, and nothing abnormal was seen. thus ruling out the possibility of a structural failure in the reservoir. When asked if it could be natural evaporation due to the very high prevailing temperatures at summer down there, Sangoni said that while temperatures were in excess of 40 centigrade, that's 105 degrees Fahrenheit, had been reported in the region, it would still not account for the evaporation of such a massive amount of water, considering when a minimum limit is reached, the pump replenishes whatever may have been used or what might evaporate. Sangoni told Cor Circulo Ovnilogico of Rio Quartense that barely 10 centimeters of water were left in the bottom of the tank. There was no turbidity in the water, and that no traces of moisture had been seen outside the tank. He also noted that he had made a series of investigations among the few neighbors in the area, separated by about a half a kilometer each, in order to corroborate or find out if anyone might have seen any luminous objects over the area. His research, however, was fruitless, as no one was able to answer positively his question about anybody seeing luminous objects in the area. Sangoni expressed his astonishment at this development. It's the first in that area, and then he learned later that similar cases to those in La Pampa had occurred in the province of Cordoba over the last 35 days, and he considered the possibility that a similar phenomenon may have taken place in Canada, Duluque. UFOs seen around La Pampa and water disappearing. As they say, strange days indeed. And Brian J. Callahan of Châteauguay, Quebec, managed to videotape about a minute and a half of a UFO sighting on the night of December 29th last. By the way, thanks to Scott Corrales of the Institute for Hispanic Ufology for that Argentine water tank story. Brian Callahan lives about 15 minutes from downtown Montreal. He saw and videotaped a big light in the sky that changed color from white to amber to yellow, orange, through red. It hovered for a few minutes in one spot, and little white lights would leave and re-enter it. About five of them, he said. They would travel at a perpendicular angle to the main object and then go back to it. It remained stationary for about 5 minutes or so, then the performed some strange maneuvers and took off at high speed, eh? Yeah, they all tend to do that, don't they? It gets to be pretty darn spooky when that happens. A lot of reports of much strangeness this past week. Let's see here. What else can we tell you about? Well, Paul Hellyer is going to speak at a Hawaii conference on ET civilizations and world peace. Paul Hellyer, Canada's former Minister of Defense. It's happening this coming summer. And when does he say that? This is Michael Sala writing. Other than the fact that he was a former Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer probably knows less than you folks who listen to this program regularly about UFOs. Having seen him speak, and we've talked about this on this program before, having seen him speak at Convocation Hall, a great deal of disappointment among the serious UFO researchers who were there, that he would quote from Philip Corso's book and Alfred Weber's book. So unless he's done a huge amount of boning up and read some real good books, useful books like Richard Hall's books, or perhaps Jerome Clark's books, or Wendy Connor's books, or any of the, Stanton T. Friedman, he's not going to have really much to say and probably end up repeating himself in Hawaii. I think that's this coming November. Is it November? I've lost the date here. However, he will be in Hawaii, and that's good, I guess. Michael Sala's very happy about it. The ExoPolitics crowd are very happy. The Honorable Paul Hellyer, former Canadian Minister for National Defense, recently declared that evidence confirming the reality of UFOs and visiting extraterrestrial civilizations is subject to what has probably been the greatest and most successful cover-up in the history of the world. He did say that he talked to a general through his nephew, who confirmed that everything that Philip Corso wrote in his book was true, and more. Well, a lot of research has been done into Philip Corso, and not a lot of people believe a word of what he said in his book, other than he was a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army.
Here with his take on it, is Dave Berlock.
There's an interesting thread on the UFO updates list. Call it More Jill Tarter. And it was started by somebody posting an interview that was conducted by Willow Larson with Jill Tarter, and she appropriately titled the piece, The Search for E.T. Now, for those of you that don't know it, Jill Tarter is the real-life person that Jodie Foster portrays in the movie Contact. So, being the director for SETI at Mountain View, California, means that she gets to spend her time listening for evidence of extraterrestrial life. SETI has been an ongoing project now for decades, and so far we haven't heard anything that we can conclusively state as being evidence of technically advanced life forms from any of the systems that Ms. Tarter has targeted so far. Now, I have mixed feelings on the whole SETI project, because on the one hand, I feel that it is at least a positive step forward in trying to find out about other life in the universe. But on the other hand, I feel that perhaps it might be a complete waste of time, because there are too many factors that have to fall into place to allow SETI to come to a positive conclusion. The whole basis of the project is of radio waves or radio frequency transmissions, and the concept is that as a planet, we have been beaming radio waves out into space for more than 70 years now. And if the truth be known, we've actually been doing transmission of sound wirelessly for over 100 years. So somebody out there should have picked up evidence of our transmissions. In the movie Contact, they not only pick up our transmissions, they decode our transmissions, they figure out what we're saying, and they make a decision to send us back something. Unfortunately, you'd have better luck at picking the lottery numbers than you would at getting an intelligible transmission back from another civilization like that, because of the assumptions that you have to make. First, we'd have to assume that they use or have used the same technology that we do to communicate over long distances. Secondly, we'd have to assume that if they did manage to pick up evidence of one of our transmissions, that they would be able to identify it as coming from a technically advanced civilization. And finally, we have to assume that they would be able to decode the information and be able to respond to us in kind. The other option is that they, being the other intelligent species out there, have communicated using radio waves, and that we have the capability to be able to pick up something that they said at one time to each other. Well, this option also makes the assumption that we'd have to be able to determine the transmission as being something intelligible. So we could say, yep, that's evidence of intelligence. But for just a second, think of what would happen if you heard a snippet of conversation of a language that you had never heard before. Maybe a language similar to that of the dolphin. Would you be able to identify it as coming from an intelligent species? I don't know. Well, as I said earlier, I believe that SETI is forward positive step towards trying to solve the problem of finding other races in the universe. But I honestly don't think that it will be the solution to finding them and proving their existence. There's going to be something much more conclusive than that done long before we ever hear E.T. phoning here to ask for the recipe for strawberry ice cream. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Yeah, it's staggering how much money gets poured into that, into SETI.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Furlott.
It certainly is.
And no conclusive scientific proof.
No.
Or
no.
Evidence of anything out there. And, you know, the odds of finding anything incoming on radio frequencies are relatively slim.
Yeah, well,
I would say less than the chance of Bob or Carol or Ted or Alice or Big Daddy seeing a UFO tonight.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's also the same situation, though, is it's not only catching that transmission, it's being able to recognize it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the trick. I mean, we could turn around. We may have received thousands of things from species out there, but nobody here has sort of gone, oh, well, yeah, I speak Aquilian or something.
Yeah,
and, yeah, I can figure that out.
Yeah, I speak static.
Yeah, exactly.
I speak white noise.
Yeah, white noise or quasar or pulsar.
Well, exactly.
You know?
We don't know what form their communications would take,
mm-hmm.
if indeed they are radio.
Exactly. You know, I mean, just because we developed radio doesn't mean that everybody else has to. I don't know.
Well, yeah, unless it's brain power, and, you know, our brains are not attuned to any of those frequencies or channels.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, you get channelers who allegedly speak to extraterrestrials.
True.
Extra-biological entities.
Mm-hmm. We also, though, another part and parcel of this, is,
yes.
if we look at it, is the fact that we have species here on this planet that communicate in frequencies that we cannot actually hear.
Or even understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
We're talking dolphins, porpoises.
Yeah.
Whales.
Dolphins, porpoises, whales, but also we get into, like, mammals, like bats.
Yes.
You know, they use ultrasonics.
Yes.
And we can't hear them.
Mm-hmm.
They can.
And they can hear the sounds of the tsunamis coming and head for the hills.
Mm-hmm. If you see a bat running for the hills, join it.
Yes. Running like a bat out of hill.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Oh, that was bad.
When you get off the radio, Dave, go look at tonight's program listing in the news and info section. There's an interesting picture that I didn't have time to post to the list about, but I did have time to put it up at the website. Very, very interesting image there.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I will do that right away.
Right away. Yeah, well, you're on offline, off-the-phone high-speed now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, but you're not sitting at your machine, are you?
I certainly am. I'm just opening up my browser as we speak.
Aha. NASA calls this the exhumed crater, a crater on Mars. The question is, exhumed by whom? In fact, the poster of this one says that it matches the aerial view of the open pit copper mine in Arizona.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Yes. That Gordon J. Giannotto. That I got that from today.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting image. I thought enough of it to... You got a loud keyboard, Dave. Must keep the family awake at night. Good Lord.
Hey, it's one of those. It's one of those old.
Daddy's
IBM
on the keyboard. Yeah, big metallic keys, and yeah, it sounds like it. Dave, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Enjoy the image. We'll talk to you next week.
For sure.
UFO Review is a free monthly zine published on the web, and each issue carries extensive interviews with those in the ufological field and associated subjects, as well as contributed articles, regular features, comment, cartoons, and usually a dose or three of satire thrown in somewhere as well. Published and edited by our regular monthly correspondent from over there in Cheshire in the United Kingdom, Stuart Miller joins us. Good morning, Stuart.
And good evening to you, Errol. Good evening.
A jolly good issue last time.
Yeah, yes. And I think the main article, the lead article, the first article was probably the best.
Yeah, just because you wrote it.
No, just because you wrote it.
Yeah.
Oh, you spoke it.
Yes, we had a lovely time on the phone, and by the end of which I thought, I've maybe said too much.
Well, I did give you the opportunity, Errol.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did, and I decided to leave it as it was.
And I'm delighted that you did, because I thought it was a marvelous insight into your personality, your background, your personal history, how you got to where you are.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
I crawled and I kissed.
No, you didn't.
Groveled.
You nearly got beaten up in the process.
Yes, several times.
Indeed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, and it was what was really fascinating, because you interviewed both myself and Joe McGonigal, who runs the United Kingdom UFO list.
Yep.
And what really, as I said a couple of times, knocked my socks off was the fact that both Joe McGonigal and I went to the Army Apprentices School in Harrogate, Yorkshire.
Yeah.
That's where we started. although he was there 20 years after me. But we both ended up in the Royal Signals in the United Kingdom and around various parts of the globe.
And then went on to be moderators for UFO-related mailing lists.
Yeah, what amazing synchronicity that is, isn't it?
Yeah, or just deeply suspicious. One or the other.
Yeah. Joe McGonigal and I colluded. Colluded.
Take your orders from somewhere else, I think.
Yeah, well, that's been suggested several times.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Several years ago when I'd first... I think the list had been going a year or two, maybe three. And somebody had suggested that I was working for some... undercover for some organization.
Unspecified.
Yeah. In fact, I believe there's a clip of John Karras and I talking about it on the radio from a few years ago. Secret Agent Errol.
Well, anything's possible.
Yeah, well, we missed that part out in the interview, didn't we?
Why, has Dave gone?
Dave? For a lot?
Yeah.
Gone.
I mean, has he left? I mean, is he no longer available?
No.
Because I got into this habit of taking apart his take, and I wanted to say something about SETI. I think, why is it? Well, I know it's a rhetorical question, but why is it that we don't like SETI? Why is it that we haven't really got a good word to say about them?
I think because probably they pontificate about things that they know nothing about, haven't investigated, haven't researched, primarily UFOs, and they're off on a sort of mad goose chase, needle in a haystack of their own, spending bajillions of dollars, and there's a lot of very strong evidence that suggests you don't have to go out there looking for them with radio telescopes. They're coming here, and if we invested the money that's being spent, Mr. Spielberg, on SETI...
Paul Allen, actually. Paul Allen.
Well, Paul Allen, yeah. Well, Paul Allen and Spielberg. Spielberg funded it for quite a while.
Right.
And why he never, you know... Because of his interest in the subject, why he never funded some UFO research, I have no idea.
I think the real truth of the matter is they just haven't got a good word to say about us. But it's like, you know, turkeys don't vote for Christmas. If they say, well, yes, you know, all this evidence that you ufologists have got, you know, all these photographs, these statements, the film and so on, yes, there's something to that, then if they do say that, they might as well just pack up and give up.
Yes.
So they're not going to say that.
No, they're not.
But...
Ever.
I mean, this thing about radio signals, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're presumably, if there's any intelligent civilization out there, presumably they may well be more advanced than us. They may well have either never used radio or have been through that and gone on to much greater things subsequently. But if they got a radio signal, it would be within their technological capabilities to recognize that and to duplicate that and to answer us back.
Well, one would think so. But maybe they just can't be bothered. I mean, there are no signs of intelligent life on this planet. Yes.
Yeah.
So what did you mean by, has Dave gone? Well, you obviously heard his take.
Yes, no, I just meant as he sort of disappeared, because I wanted to sort of put those points to him.
Yeah, he's gone. Although we could call him back and ask him.
Oh, no. I think he's tired of me taking apart his take.
Well, that's what they're for. They're editorial opinions that need to be...
But he sounds so pained when I sort of pick holes in it. He sounds upset.
I don't think he is.
Well,
he's playing a role, that's all. Why are you picking on me? It's my job to pick on other people.
No, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's the pleasantries out of the way. It's been a month since we talked. Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you.
I like to think that Santa was wonderful to you.
He was moderate.
Oh.
Moderate.
That's a Rutkowskiism.
What, moderate?
Moderate, yes. How are you, Chris? Oh, moderate.
It's very non-committal, that, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Neither good nor bad.
Yeah. Yeah, he always signs his posts to the Canufo list as nobody in particular.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, no, he's... You'll hear him later. He's fine.
Good.
What's been piquing your interest across the pond there?
A news item of about a week ago that seems to have crept under the radar of most people, or it's something that they've turned their noses up. But there's a UFO cult on the loose again. And I've never heard of them before, but they've been around for years, since 1953.
Really?
The Church of the Subgenius.
Well, oh, yeah, that's Bob Dobbs.
Yes, but yeah. I've not heard of them.
Have had Bob Dobbs sitting in this chair next to me here. In the past, he was at the Marshall McLuhan Festival.
Was it a wild interview? Because I have to say, looking at how this cult runs themselves, they seem just in another, on another planet.
Bob Dobbs is not a part of that. Church of the Subgenius, it seems to me, has always been, a parody, silly people. They're not seriously serious. In fact, they're sillily serious, seriously silly people.
Well, they're saying that the world will come to an end on Wednesday, July the 5th this year.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and that,
you mean they don't mean it, Aaron?
No, of course they don't. Have you gone and looked at the Bob Dobbs at Church of the Subgenius' website?
No.
Oh, you must do that. It's fun.
Fair enough.
Really?
Well, they're into naughty stuff as well.
Well, yeah, but all of it's all a satire. It's a parody.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. it's been about a year. It has been a year now since our Freedom of Information Act became effective. And I don't know if you recall, but in the run-up to it, I remember talking about a news item that had broken about that just before the Act actually became active, that the Ministry of Defense, surprise, surprise, had discovered that large numbers of their records were covered in asbestos dust.
Yes, I remember that. It was like parachute test dummies.
Well, yeah, it's... there's been a bit more about that now.
Mm.
And some of the documents, in fact, the numbers, although the actual pages are... Well, the number of pages are actually quite frightening. 10 million pages, 63,000 files are unavailable.
Really?
But, hold on. You are right to be cynical, but in matters UFO-related,
yes.
There are one or two in there, apparently, but it's mainly things like... weapons that the UK have sold to Saudi Arabia, how and where we tortured German prisoners of war in London.
Oh, that kind of asbestos.
That kind of it. Well, and production of chemical weapons and our chemical warfare policy, mysterious operations called Operation Grape and Operation Tiara. It even creeps into Northern Ireland, actually. I don't know if you remember, there were so many atrocities in Northern Ireland, it's difficult. Mm. But there was one that I do recall involving a show band, the Miami Show Band, they were called, I think.
Yeah.
They were stopped and dragged out of the vans, and a number of them were shot.
Really?
It would appear, reading between the lines, that the British were involved in that as well. There are some UFO documents in there. I'd like to know what they are, because if they are that good that they've, the MOD have covered them in stardust, or is that, sorry, asbestos?
Asbestos dust, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to know what they are.
And well, are photocopiers prone to asbestos dust?
Well,
they're not going to send us the originals or send you the originals, so what's, you know, this sounds like a crock to me.
Well, they are slowly copying them, they say, and they will make them available or decide whether to make them available or not as and when they copy them.
Oh, jolly good.
Well,
jolly,
you know, it's
hockey stick.
Well, there's a throwaway line in there.
Is there?
In the article about, and there are some UFO files in there as mm-hmm. well. But this contrasts rather severely with what Nick Pope tells us about the attitude of the MOD. And indeed, everybody else that's got any connection, I'm talking about UFO researchers now, mm-hmm. who have any connection or involvement with the MOD. The MOD's attitude, apparently, is to just let the public have absolutely everything. We don't keep anything back.
No.
And yet, it does appear that they are. What a
yeah.
surprise.
Yeah, well, it's fairy dust or oofle dust or what, yeah. Asbestos.
There's a strange contradiction in this story, though, because by the same token, a lot of regional newspapers in the UK are making regular applications to the MOD under the Freedom of Information Act
mm-hmm.
For sightings local to their area and are basing newspaper articles on the responses that they're getting.
I must say there have been a remarkable number of UFO stories in local newspapers, which I have... thanks to you being able to read and pass on.
Do you mean generally or in the UK?
Generally in the UK, it seems to me.
Actually, I it may seem like that. I wouldn't say that there was, well, ha.
Ha.
Right. we just had, as it was the biggest yawn going, but we just had the anniversary of Rendlesham.
Mm.
And I counted 12... articles in the media, local and national,
mm-hmm.
In sort of commemoration of it, which may seem a lot, but hardly any of it reached me, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yes.
It sort of came within my radar.
Well, I was speaking more specifically about the number of local newspapers that have been covering reports of UFOs of late.
I don't get the impression that there's more than usual.
Really?
There's a regular sort of trickle.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't have said, Errol, that the number
okay.
has increased. It certainly doesn't seem like that to me.
Maybe my awareness of them has increased because of you and the splendid UFO news service that you provide to people like me who run the UFO updates list, so I can guide people to those articles.
Well, thank you.
No, and thank you.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because the gentleman that you were talking about earlier, Don Ledger,
mm-hmm.
Has this, what I regarded, or did regard, as slightly contrary attitude to lights in the sky, whereas most people, well, okay, no, I'll personalize it and say, I tend to think that most strange lights seen in the sky are military aircraft of some sort or another. Don is vehemently opposed to that. And doesn't think that's the case, and he bases his sound argument actually on the fact that NASA or other military agencies are always putting out tenders for the development of something that should be able to do this, that, and the other, and yet we're seeing stuff in the sky that's already doing this, that, and the other.
Well, the flying triangle specifically, I think he was referring to today.
Well,
in fact.
The reason I mention that is because. I did an interview with Nick Pope, who, you know, you sat on the MOD, the UFO desk at the MOD.
At the Ministry of Defence in London.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that in the UK, and I'm sure it's probably the same, well, I presume it's the same in North America, that when the RAF fly their black projects, they fly them in very specific designated areas.
Mm.
And he knows where those areas are. And, you know, we people see lights in other areas, if you know what I mean. In
yes.
other words, he gets a report, or he did, and he'd take some interest in it because it wasn't happening within the designated zone where black projects are flown. So, you know, Don may well have a point.
Yes, and we've had flying triangles over Toronto, for Pete's sake, at a subway station. I think it was at Donlands, either Donlands or Pape subway station.
you would think then...
In the daylight.
Exactly, that Toronto is probably not part of the designated zone where black projects are flown.
Well, one would think not, you know, and especially when this thing was hovering silently. Well, the woman thought it was silent. She was hearing impaired, but she didn't hear anything.
I don't know.
And nobody else paid any attention.
Well, you had a sighting near Toronto.
Yes.
You know, which sounded very, very weird.
It was very, very weird, and I can't believe that my cousin and I were the only ones that saw it.
Well.
In all the, you know, the length of time it took to come down 115-35 to the 401 and into Toronto. I mean, that's 30 minutes.
Yep.
And
it wasn't going very fast, Errol.
No, it wasn't. It was doing about the speed that we were doing, which was about 100 clicks, I think.
Which was the speed limit.
Yeah.
So at least those things keep to the speed limit.
Yeah. we have about a minute left, Stuart.
Okay, well, something to really look forward to tomorrow. When you wake up, hopefully the Stardust space capsule will have touched down safely in, is it Ohio or Salt Lake City? Very important because of what it contains, which is mostly air, but it's come back with not asbestos dust, but stardust.
From comets.
Exactly. And the implications for scientific research are just enormous, including things like panspermia, the building blocks of life in space, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, we're hoping that it comes down safely, unlike the last little space capsule that NASA brought down.
Yes.
I forget what it was called, but it absolutely smashed to bits on the ground when it landed.
Much the same as the Beagle on Mars. Huh?
Please, please. That was a magnificent British failure.
It was.
We've located it.
Apparently it has been located, and they're sending a search and rescue team.
No, we're going to whistle.
Yeah, bring back the Beagle. Come on, puppy. Stuart Miller, thank you, sir.
Pleasure.
Well, it's always good having you on. It always feels very different when you're here, and look forward to talking to you again next month.
Indeed.
Good night.
All the best to you.
And to you. UFOReview.net. Go download yourself the latest issue. It's free. UFOReview.net. Chris Rutkowski is, he's above it all, he's an astronomer. He's been studying reports of UFOs since the mid-1970s, a writer and editor for science and technology publications. He also writes about his investigations and research into UFO cases. And he publishes, along with Jeff Dittman, the Canadian UFO Survey, an annual compilation of UFO reports from across Canada. And we thought it would be good, since this is the beginning of a new year, to catch up with what's been happening ufologically report-wise over the past year. Good evening, Chris Rutkowski.
Good evening, Errol et al.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on the program, Chris.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here again.
Since last you were on here, and we talked about this on the phone a couple of weeks ago, listeners may recall the discovery of an original King James version of the Bible, a first edition copy of the official King James Bible, which was found at University of Manitoba in Winnipeg.
Right. Yeah.
And you work in what is it, the public relations department you work in now at UM?
Well, right. My day job is in public affairs,
which involves media
relations and that type of thing.
And you were the guy who put out the initial release on the discovery of that Bible.
Yes, because when I saw this book, and I was in the vault with my cotton gloves on, as you have to wear when you're holding something valuable like this, I thought, this is fascinating, and the world should know that this thing exists. So I sent that out. It has nothing to do with the UFO-y type stuff, but it's indicative of...
there's enough descriptions of what we think are UFOs in the Bible to warrant mentioning that.
That's true, and whether the angels inspired or something else, it's difficult to tell.
Yeah, must have been an awesome moment to hold something. What was it, 1600 and something?
1611.
1611.
Yeah, and you know what, you do get this feeling of awe to hold something like that, that you realize might have been held by somebody a very, very long time ago. In fact, what's interesting about this Bible is that it's attributed, and the note says that this may have been the one that King James himself used. And I'm not sure how they would figure out the provenance of that, but supposedly the archivists believe that that's possible. So, you know,
amazing.
It is amazing.
Amazing that it would end up in the archives at University of Manitoba.
Of all places.
Of all places. Mind you, they archive some fairly interesting things, as we have talked about on the other program I did here a year or two ago. Anyway, that's a whole other subject,
Not quite, because these archives, if you're going to be going in that direction, I'm going to say the U of M archives have some fascinating things. In fact, they house one of the very few collections of paranormal phenomena.
That's where I was headed, yes. Yeah.
Which is very relevant here. In fact, they have books, there are some books on UFOs in the collection dating back quite some time, and some rare items as well. So it's very interesting. These archives have quite a fascinating variety of things, and it's interesting to pore through all the various things that are in there.
And what a fortunate man that you are to be so close to all of that.
It is fun.
And have it accessible to you, because you are Chris Rutkowski.
That's what the label on the back of my shirt says anyways. But
oh, my.
You want to talk about UFOs, apparently, though.
Eventually. We'll get to it. In fact, why don't we do that now?
Okay.
2005, how has it shaped up? Because I remember halfway through, the numbers were down a fair bit.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I'm just in the process of working with Jeff Dittman on entering the data and working on producing the 2005 survey.
Mm-hmm.
This year, as a matter of fact, we're going to be working very closely with Barb Campbell out in Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
She is going to be releasing a mini report on Saskatchewan. Interestingly enough, Saskatchewan has a phenomenal amount of UFOs compared to previous years, somewhere, according to her reckoning, 50, 60, something like that, which is way up from previous years. But overall, it just seems, just from entering the data, we're not finished yet, about maybe a third to a half way through entering the data, and the numbers just simply aren't grabbing us this year.
Really?
Really.
Mm.
So
the types of reports that you're getting, are they grabby, or are they sort of relatively mundane lights in the sky kind of reports?
Pretty mundane this year, with some interesting exceptions. In fact, there's I can't verify this with the data yet because it's not all entered.
Mm.
But it seems to be there are more daylight observations this year than ever before. I don't recall entering these many daylight observations before. Another thing that we're going to be indicating this year is the number of videos and photographs. This is the age of the digital camera and cell phone camera.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few cases this year have accompanying images, not particularly revealing images in most cases, very, very small white dots in a black sky, or the obverse, very, very tiny black dots in a blue sky. There seems to be quite a few of those this year, and we're indicating that. I would have to say that the classic flying saucer disc is long a thing of the past. Very few cases of the classic flying saucer. I guess the model is phased out of existence. Chrysler has moved out of that part of Windsor, and it's just not producing them anymore, I suppose.
Hmm. Now, I guess, though, with the improvement in the megapixelage of digital cameras, the higher resolution pictures and the storage cards now being substantial, you can shoot whopping great resolution images, and those will blow up quite nicely, and the little dots will certainly
resolve into something.
Into something, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, in a few cases, there are some interesting disc or dome disc-shaped objects that are visible once you really crank up the resolution. It's really tough, if you have cases where the person didn't actually see much in the sky, or they were looking at something else when they were taking the photograph,
mm-hmm.
and this thing appears later, it's difficult to put that in the context of an actual sighting of a UFO or flying saucer or what have you.
Mm.
But there are some very, very interesting cases. For the most part, I would say the strangeness rating, most of your listeners know, We rate between one and nine, whether something is really unusual, one and two being, you know, very dull lights stationary in the sky that turn out to be stars, and nine being landings by the Martians themselves in Parliament Hill. And Lord knows we need that given the election situation right now.
Oh, yes. But, I'd vote for them.
So somewhere in between it. And I would say that the vast majority of cases are somewhere in the threes and fours range. So,
Anything up in the 7-8 range?
A few. You might recall me talking with you a number of months ago about a fascinating case up in northern Quebec, almost in Nunavut, of a very bright disc-shaped object with lights around it that was seen by a number of prominent individuals in a town up there, checked with airport authorities, and it was very well witnessed, very well observed, very well recorded, and we simply don't know what that thing was. So that one was actually just in early May of 2005, and it was seen for quite an extended period of time of the order of 15 or 20 minutes, and it simply was not a conventional aircraft. So there are outstanding cases like that, but for the most part, we're looking at some very, very typical lights in the sky. In fact, what's the other thing that is very prominent this year, we have a lot of fireball and bright meteor bolide cases, which are creeping their way into the database. And it's a challenge because they're not technically UFOs because we know what these
are. They're IFOs.
Yeah, they're IFOs.
Mm-hmm.
But because some people do report them to UFO agencies and reporting bodies, they do get classified. So if we have a number of reports from bona fide meteor observers of the same fireball plus some civilians reporting them as UFOs, we will group them together, and that tends to shoot up the numbers. There's a case in BC where literally dozens upon dozens of people saw a very bright fireball, reported them as UFOs, but of course they're the we know that there's some sort of meteoritic activity, so it's difficult to quantify or qualify whether these objects really should be put into a UFO database. But
it's really a contradiction when you say it's an identified flying object,
right,
rather than an unidentified flying object. One would wonder why it would be in the UFO report.
Right, and I guess one of the reasons we do include them as a matter of course is because we try to allow ourselves some comparison with Project Blue Book and some of the other projects, which did include a number of cases of that caliber and type. So in order to offer some reasonable comparison, we include them.
Interesting that you would say at the outset that the flying disc-shaped objects are on the way out, and yet the first seven or eight that pops to mind for you is the one up in northern Quebec, which was a disc.
Right, exactly. But it is very few and far between.
Chris Rutkowski is with us. He's the publisher, along with Jeff Dipman, of the 2005, the annual Canadian UFO survey, and he and Jeff are crunching numbers and finalizing the 2005 survey. Do you have a sort of final number that you could lay on us, Chris Rutkowski?
No, unfortunately, because we're still in the middle of crunching and putting this in, the survey, as you know, will be probably released sometime in mid-February-ish. But I can tell you the numbers are down as I speak here. I think we're up to around 200 cases somewhere in the middle of May.
Yeah, it was 400 and something, I think, at the end of, 2004?
Something like that. Of course, we were up in the 800s actually 800 some for 2004.
Ah, that's what it was, yeah.
It was 400 the year before or so, because we were really climbing. It would not surprise me if we have plateaued and peaked previously, because the type of thing that you would expect from a real phenomenon, that it would always wax and wane depending on so many different variables. It would be rather remarkable if it kept on increasing constantly as it has been doing over the past 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years almost.
Yes.
because that would mean that it might have more to do with, for example, the rise of the internet and the increasing availability of sites accepting cases and that type of thing. But you know, if it's going down, then that suggests there is a real phenomenon occurring that may have some sociological factors, psychological factors, and certainly physical factors.
Right. Now, these numbers that come to you, the reports that come to you, I know that Brian Veich collects UFO reports, as does Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. Do Peter and Brian pass on Canadian reports to you?
Yes, in fact, we do get very good cooperation. Since we began doing this back in the late 1980s, and we've been at this long, the cooperation has generally been good from serious researchers. Now, there are some holdouts, I suppose, who hang on to their cases and then don't share them very much, but we do have good cooperation from the really dedicated people like Peter Davenport and Brian Veich, and certainly also glean from George Filer and from Roundup and from MUFON, National MUFON this year, plus a number of other places, including Department of National Defense and Department of Transport.
Yeah, that was my next question, being the official reporting agent. the agent to whom...
The double knot spy agent, yes. Yes, we still are getting some cases through official channels.
Yes.
The numbers have never been spectacular, of the order of one or two a month from those sources. The vast majority still come from civilian reporting agencies. But we do get some cases coming in that way. Some come in from media, and certainly some come in directly to us. Your listeners probably are aware of a number of places to report, certainly UFO info and updates and places like that do accept. The survey itself, we do have another email address, which is simply CanadianUFOReport@hotmail.com, and we do get a number of cases coming in through there.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many ways of reporting cases now that it's quite a challenge to try and consolidate and acquire all the data that is possible to get a good picture. And what's interesting is we probably have more sites and more web and internet ways of receiving cases now, but the numbers are still appearing to be down right now. So I don't think it really has much to do with the proliferation of ways for believers to exchange information, if you want to believe the skeptics.
So numbers are down. Spectacular cases. Well, we covered the one off in northern Quebec, almost up into the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
How about big city sightings? That other than moving lights in the sky.
Well, we do have a few cases from Toronto area and suburbs. I mean, we do get Brampton and Kingston and London and Scarborough and places all over the place in southern Ontario. It's very interesting and also frustrating because we do get cases of somebody reporting, for example, just looking at one from Scarborough and from Brampton, where people had seen an object, white object, moving through the sky, the speed of a plane, on a similar flight path to planes that they've seen, but they knew it wasn't an aircraft because they just felt it wasn't. So it was reported as a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those that we just sort of put down as possible aircraft because it certainly, seems if it quacks like a duck and all that sort of stuff, and it very likely is, but people are very, they're being very good about reporting the things, and we really appreciate that because without getting this data, we really have no idea what people are seeing and can't get an appreciation of what is being seen from one side of this country to the other.
So that email address again is CanadianUFOReport@hotmail.com. @hotmail.com.
Yeah.
So make a note of that, folks. Well, you can report a UFO sighting at virtuallystrange.net. There's a link right on the front page there, and we'll make sure that those reports are passed on to Chris. Chris, can you spend a little time with us?
Certainly, I can.
Oh, good, because I want to gossip.
Oh, good. Now the good stuff.
Chris, you and I haven't talked on the radio since the Exopolitics conference that happened here in Toronto, and the emergence of the former Minister of Defense Paul Hellyer as a focal point, if I may use that, as you know, an emerging spokesman for the field of UFO research. What's your reaction to all of that?
Well, I've never been a complete fan of the exopolitics movement myself. I have to say that I'm not sure how much it could or will ever accomplish. I think that working quietly in the background will probably accomplish more than very loud lobbying, but in these days of very loud lobbying, it's difficult to say exactly what anything will accomplish in terms of lobbying for anything. We live in a very political climate right now in general, and the politics of pretty well everything is becoming more important. There is the politics of the food we eat, the politics of our jobs, the politics of even the clothes we wear come into question when we talk about outsourcing and things like that. So politics is getting much more important in terms of the connections and how things get done and our awareness of it. So it's not surprising that the politics of UFOs should be so much on so many people's minds. But again, the question is, will it actually accomplish much? If the alien crashed saucers and bodies and all that sort of stuff and been covered up all this time, will a lot of loud placard-waving people on the legislature grounds or parliament or whatever, will that actually get anything released? It's difficult to say. And whether we have whistleblowers, possibly like Paul Hellyer, although there's some debate as to whether that is actually his role, but whether we have people coming forward from the dark recesses of historical politics and talking about their knowledge of UFOs having some relevance today, making a difference, making a change, it's really difficult to say because we simply have such little information to go on.
Yeah. Yes. And Paul Kimball, he of the UFO documentary production, Red Star Films, out on the East Coast in Halifax, suggested on his blog that a much more interesting person to speak to would be Ed Schreier.
Absolutely, and I spoke with Mr. Schreier a number of years ago now because while he was involved in Manitoba politics, out my way, there had been a supposed sighting by at least him and one of his aides of a very bright object when he was traveling to Dauphin for a meeting of some sort. I did speak with him and a number of individuals in his family about that. This goes back quite a few years now, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he did raise the issue in the House of Commons as a popular passing interest because a lot of his constituents were curious and wanted to know more, and they were demanding to know more about the government releasing more information about what's going on. And being a very honest and dedicated politician, he responded to their queries by raising the issue in the House of Commons. Not getting very far, if I recall, but he did raise the issue. In fact, he's one of the few politicians who has. And now that he's back in politics, although very possibly briefly, depending on the polls, it's difficult to say you know, whether this would be a good time to raise it with him. But he certainly you know, was willing a number of years ago, 20 years ago or more, to talk about it, and perhaps will be more willing soon. And again, he was a little more outspoken than Paul Hellyer was back at the time as well.
For those of you who live outside of Canada, we have an election coming up next Monday. Ed Schreier was the former premier of Manitoba, which is kind of like the governor of Manitoba, I guess, if you're an American. And he is running for the New Democratic Party on the federal level in Monday's election. And the New Democrats are running a third in third place, as they usually do in the federal elections here. Yes. Kimball, Paul Kimball had posted the questions that were recorded by Hansard, the official, what's the word, the official record of the parliamentary sessions. Interesting questions, but as you said, he didn't get much of a response.
No, it was pretty well brushed aside, as one might expect in a political climate, in a parliamentary climate, where the view was that it's not worth mentioning and let's talk about something more important, such as budgets and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's always a useful cop-out that it's not that important to talk about.
Right, but of course, one's constituency, it might be more important to some people. So.
Either that or put you in the loony department as far as your politics are concerned.
Well, and when you think about it, it actually was quite brave noble to at least raise the issue. But again, at the time, this is during the time, close to the time of when Stefan Mihalik had his encounter in Falcon Lake, and the stories about UFOs were literally every second day, it seemed, in the press. So it was much more of a popular topic. It was much more in the public mind. Hmm. It made a lot of sense to at least raise the issue. And given that climate, then it was appropriate. And, he did his job for the constituents and certainly on behalf of a lot of people in Canada who are interested. Remember, the numbers are actually declining now, but at the time, polls are suggesting that a great majority of people believed in aliens and UFOs and that type of thing, according to some polls. And the numbers are declining somewhat since then, but they're still quite significant.
Really, they're declining.
I think according to the polls, that the numbers are just showing some slight declining.
Oh, I wonder where the what happened to those people who declined?
They're reclining, or something.
Did they die? I used to believe in them, but I don't anymore. Need to take a break here, Chris Rakowski. Grateful that you're hanging in. And of course, it's only 9:42 in your neighborhood. So, yeah. An email, Chris, from Brian Baldwin down there in North Carolina. He says, I find it interesting that Chris has seen a decline in disc cases. I research angel hair and have noticed a correlation with angel hair and disc or cigar-shaped objects. There have been very few good angel hair cases in recent years. The 1950s were loaded with angel hair cases associated with discs, globes, and cigars. Brian asks, is it possible that our little friends are using a different, more environmentally friendly model now?
Aliens have gone green. That's actually a good point, that we've actually seen different categories of UFOs almost completely vanish. Angel hair is one particular case category that I don't recall having an angel hair case cross my desk in many years now.
Which sort of answers his final question. He wondered if Chris had heard of any recent angel hair cases in Canada.
No, I simply haven't. In fact, I'm searching my mind to remember the last one. I think the last one that I remember occurred in Selkirk, Manitoba, a number of years ago. But that goes back some time now. Again, discs are on the way out. Cigars, we actually did have a few more cigars last year, just from what I remember from typing in. We've mentioned this before, that classic Close Encounter Trace cases, the Ted Phillips rings and that type of thing left behind by objects which landed and took off, those are almost unheard of now, almost completely seconded and usurped by the more popular crop circles, whatever they are, may or may not be, but those are usually not have anything, or they usually don't have anything to do with UFOs. There's usually no UFOs sighted; those simply appear. So, it's interesting that the classic cases of the saucer landing and taking off and leaving behind the Tully saucer nest, those have almost vanished. And one would wonder again, why has that been the case? What has happened to all that stuff?
Perhaps they felt that they'd gathered enough dirt and critters that they don't need to do that anymore.
That's right, and we're all going to be destroyed to make way for a super freeway highway.
Yeah,
any minute now, anyways.
An intergalactic bypass.
Bypass.
Hyperspace.
Yes.
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 Yes. Resistance is futile or useless.
Or useless.
Yes.
And I have to also mention there, but you know, the UFOs are still in our popular culture. Aliens are still in our popular culture, even more so probably in some cases.
Mm.
For this past Christmas, one of my absolute favorite, actually it came a little after Christmas, but I'll call it a Christmas present. One of my absolute favorite gifts was a giant stuffed microbe from Mars. And I'm going to give this company a plug. It's giantmicrobes.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, they have a line of microbes, everything from E. coli to syphilis and bed bugs and bookworms and everything. Giant stuffed microbes. They're just absolutely delightful. And I received mine from a very delightful young lady of my acquaintance. And it's interesting that it's in this batch of stuff, because I don't think we've 100%, according to the scientists, verified that there's life on Mars that are microbes, and yet we have a stuffed version of one already.
Oh, and life is so good. Just for the sake of people who are scratching their heads over the term angel hair,
mm-hmm.
Spider-like, spider-web-like?
Very much like fishing line or very tough spider webs, and yet when in cases I recall, when they were collected and put in a test tube or a sealer of some sort, it would somehow dissolve or vanish, never to be seen again, with no residue left behind. And this, of course, frustrated individuals who wanted to prove that there was nothing but spider webs, or those individuals wanted to prove that it was something rather unusual and very unique. It just simply could not be preserved. So, again, the idea is that this was left behind and seen to be falling from the sky after the passage of some saucer-like objects. And again, we don't, emailer had said, we don't see those cases anymore.
Mm. I think I have a hot report here for you, Chris.
Okay.
Lila joins us on the phone from Etobicoke. Hi, Lila.
Yes, hello.
Hello. What have you got for Chris?
Well, I was driving up north. I was expecting a new great-granddaughter, and I was driving up north at 5 o'clock in the morning. I left here, and I was going up the 401 September the 4th. She just turned 3 in September, so I guess that would be like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as I came over the brow of the hill towards Holland Marsh there, right up above me in the sky, there disappeared this great big fiery ball, bluish fiery ball with green streaks out behind it, and it was heading from west to east. And it must have, if it landed, it must have landed somewhere around, I would say, King City or Aurora, someplace over that way. But it was huge. I would think it would be at least 4 feet across. And I waited on the news, and I waited for read the papers. When I came home, I made phone calls, and I never did find out what it was. Never heard anybody talk about it. Nobody seemed to be interested in talking to me about it.
Yeah. Does that sound like a bolide or a fireball?
It does. It sounds like one of the classic fireballs or bolides. Last year we had quite a few across Canada, ranging from some around in January, early January in Alberta that were seen. And Etobicoke rings a bell somewhere. I think there was some that were seen in Ontario later in the year, just trying to find a reference for one. Mm. Durham, Ontario is one.
That's east Oshawa, yeah.
Yeah, that was May. Things like that. You're not alone.
Well, it's funny that nobody else seemed to say, "Oh, I wonder." I thought, you know, because I didn't hear anybody say, and there was other cars on the road besides myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this was on the 400 up near Holland Marsh when I saw it.
And it is spectacular when you see those.
Oh, it just appeared out of nowhere. It wasn't as if I saw something approaching. All of a sudden, it was just there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a flame.
Right, it looked like a plane on fire.
Except that it was round on the front and it had these little green sort of things that I would think maybe vapor trails or something out the back.
Well, you're very lucky because, you know, not everybody sees those things or even bothers to look up. I mean, heavens, imagine people on the 400 or 400 not looking up as they're driving. But, I'm sure it happens.
Lila, thank you for your call.
Okay, where would I go to see read some more about this or who would be who would know about it, or do these things happen often or?
Well, actually, I think there's a link on the Virtually Strange website to previous Canadian UFO surveys, and if we're looking 4 years ago, there's a list there buried within there of all the cases that were reported. Every year, and you probably will find something in there. I don't have access to it right now on my computer, but if you go to the Virtually Strange, Errol, you want to give her
virtuallystrange.net.
It was a great remembrance anyways for the birth of my first great grandchild.
Well, and 4 years, so he's 4 years old now.
Yes, she is.
Yeah,
well,
she is.
She was three in September. So. Hey.
Lila, I have to go. We're rapidly running out of time, but thank you for your call.
Thank you.
So virtuallystrange.net, go to Strange Days Indeed. Tonight's program listing will take you to the Canadian UFO Survey pages, and there's a link right there in tonight's program listing. Curiously enough, John Karras and my brother and I were standing on my balcony at Yonge and Eglinton, Yonge and Eligible, back in those heydays, just admiring the early evening, and we both saw and heard a fireball that was down real low. It was so low it disappeared over or behind an apartment building. We were up on the 14th floor. Maybe less than, you know, half a mile away from us. And we heard it and we saw it white with glowing green trails behind it. Are you there, Chris?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I remember that apartment, too.
Yes. Fond memories of Yonge and Eligible, as I recall. I want to thank you for being with us tonight, Chris.
Okay.
Good to know that you're still out there and still doing the job. And then once you've finalized the numbers for last year, let's have you back in February.
Absolutely.
Whenever that happens. And we'll talk more about this.
Yeah, and the cases are there for individuals like Lila. To go back, we go back to 1989, and every case that's been reported in Canada officially are in these databases.
And there are lots of them there, and it's fascinating reading. Good night, Chris. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay, good night.
Good night. And that's a good night from me, too, and thank you for being out there. Keep looking up. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bleasnell.